This is HPR episode 2959 for Thursday, the 5th of December, 2019. Today's show is entitled Interview with Josh Clemens about gpodder.net. It's part of the series Interviews, and it's hosted by Ken Fallon. It's about 39 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, what starts as an interview ends in a brainstorm.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Now, in the last few months, you'll have heard the OgCamp episodes where we went to OgCamp. And during that, we handed out a very popular list of free Creative Commons podcasts that are currently running. Now, most of the information to get that was scraped from a website called gpodder.net, and a lot of you will be familiar with the gpodder podcast application. And then I remembered hearing that their site was looking for help or whatever, so I pinged the founder, and they were gracious enough, or one of the project leads, and they were gracious enough to have this interview here today. So joining me today is, just introduce yourself.
Hey, Ken. My name is Joshua Clements, and I'm a recent volunteer on the gpodder.net website.
So can you tell us a little bit about what gpodder.net is for anybody who may not have come across it?
Yeah, absolutely. So gpodder.net was originally developed as the web backend, basically a method to sync all the data that was developed in the gpodder podcast client, which is obviously a client-side application.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it was kind of it was started by Thomas Pearl, who was the original maintainer of gpodder. Actually, I think he still works on it. He had a fledgling web-based sync capability, and Stefan Kogel decided to kind of pick that up and develop it out as a Go app, and now it's grown into what it is today.
So gpodder. The application is a Go app, is it?
I think gpodder is written in Perl, but I'm not sure.
Okay. So what does the gpodder.net website do, and do you need to use gpodder, the client, in order to use it?
So over the years, Stefan's spun out some different capabilities. He's developed a full-blown API, which I think is in its third iteration at this point. The 2 series is the stable one. But now it has a lot of its own capabilities that can work with a lot of other podcast clients. It basically serves as a website podcast directory with search functionality. You can manage users' subscriptions, sync their states, you know, if they're new or played, or if they've already downloaded them, that kind of thing. And also some kind of social functions where users can provide their own list of podcasts to share with people.
So I suppose a lot of people might be familiar with the iTunes repository or the Google podcast directories where you can browse lists of podcasts. That's kind of similar to what I'm seeing here. I see the Discover section.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's very similar to that. Of course, the big difference being that it's built with open source technologies and is provided under an open source license.
So, what sort of license is the website available as?
So right now we use the Affero GPL, which is a GPL variant that supports basically web services.
So kind of GPL 3 for the web, yeah. Okay, so when I clicked on the podcast directory there, I'm basically dropped into a section that's got trivia, and so about 10 different trivia podcasts, sports and recreation, family and kids, talk radio, gaming, that sort of thing. So you could use this if you wanted to figure out what type of podcast that you wanted to listen to. Then along the side, we have search, podcast links, suggestions, licenses, podcasts, and episodes. Can you give us a virtual tour around the website, please?
Yeah, so sorry, I'm kind of poking around here and having some technical difficulties myself. Okay, so yeah, I'm actually not too familiar with this part, so we may need to edit this part out. Sorry about that, Ken.
No, I did nothing. I will happily go through the website as well. So you can create accounts on the website, login, which I have for many years. And every time I sync up my GPodder up there, then I get a list of podcasts. So if you go into the search area, for example, and you're given a search box. So if I put in Hacker Public Radio, and then I press search, and Bob's Your Uncle, Hacker Public Radio comes on. And apparently we have 1,501 subscribers on there. 52 in another feed, 27 on other various different feeds. If I click on my podcast list, I get a list of all the podcasts that I'm currently subscribed to. If I click on suggestions, I get suggestions. So that's a bit about the website itself.
Thanks for picking up the slack on that one. Thanks.
No, not a problem. So what was the story? GPodder.net, I heard, was a one-person project, and then there was a call for help. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely, which is exactly how I got involved. You know, I heard Stefan Go on a podcast. I'm a big fan of a lot of the Jupiter Broadcasting podcast, so I either heard about it on one of those or maybe the Ubuntu podcast. But yeah, I mean, essentially, this was a one-man show for a long time, about 10 years. And so Stefan basically said he needs some help, and he's looking to eventually divest himself fully of the responsibility. But yeah, so now we've had about 16 other people that have stepped up so far that have said they'll start contributing. So we're still in the middle of learning the ropes, figuring out exactly what goes into it and how to assume all of the things that Stefan's been doing over the years.
So what's involved in all that?
So it's mostly Python based. It's, you know, the website itself is based on Django, the front end, with a Postgres back end, and of course Redis to kind of speed things up a little bit. Of course, we're running Ubuntu LTS servers on the back end, which are graciously hosted by prgmr.com. I think you just called it, say that programmer, but it's kind of abbreviated. But so, like I said, Stefan was a one-man show. He was, you know, reports, answering questions when people haven't logged in, and then also doing all of the development. So to this point, we've started to break it down into those three areas where, you know, there's somebody that's kind of doing the public stuff. I've kind of been doing that stuff, like running the Twitter account and everything. And then we've also got the support piece. We've branched out into a actual like ticket platform. So instead of Stefan getting all the emails, they go to Zoho Desk for now to basically manage the ticket requests. And then also, I think the spot where we need some help actually is under the operations, where, you know, checking to make sure the servers still run in, you know, if there are problems with the site or the backend functionality. So right now we're just that's kind of where we're at. We're self-organizing under that, under Stefan's guidance and assistance.
And where's the code hosted?
So the code is hosted on GitHub, and then we've also got the documentation auto-building to read the docs.
Okay, very good. I'll put a link to the GitHub repository in there, in the show notes for this episode. So basically, you're trying to get this from a one-person project to be a real-world open-source project, I guess, and everything that goes with that. It's actually quite apropos because Tattoo over at the GNU World Order podcast was describing something very similar to this, that if you have a project that is floundering and people rely on and love, then put out the call. And this seems to be a happy ever after story of somebody who did that very thing. So what prompted you to come forward?
So, I got involved with Linux probably about 5 years ago. Well, actually, when I was a kid, but then there was a long break. But I think that computing is, anymore, it's turning into something just like math. You know, like nobody should really own some of these things that we figure out. It's kind of like base truths, and I think that's where open source comes in, right? You know, like we're basically sharing the things we figure out and letting other people refine them and build on them. So along those lines, when I heard that he needed help, I was just like, well, I guess now's as good a time as ever to jump in there and participate.
That is very good, actually. I imagine it will be scary having all of a sudden 16 people turn up on your doorstep and just go, okay, how are we going to do this, and how are we going to maintain the enthusiasm while at the same time taking the project forward. So it's actually quite cool to see how this shapes up, and you're very welcome back in a year or two to give us an update to how you're getting on and what you need. So specifically at this moment, you're looking for operational people. Can you tell us a bit about the requirements for that job?
So, obviously, experience with Django and Redis would be most helpful. And then, as I said, we're running on Ubuntu server, so Linux administration would also be very helpful as well. But for the most part, we've got enough people that are learning about the code to basically, keep the code running and basically talk back and forth between like what's working in test and what's failing and what we need to push to ops. But somebody that can respond to those just those emergencies that pop up as things go along.
So like imagine a virtual help desk around the world, three people volunteering in three different time zones. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and obviously somebody who's knowledgeable enough that they're not going to take the server down.
Exactly. Like you said, element of competence involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Stefan's done a really good job of building a quality product. I mean, we've got tens of thousands of people using this. I think actually, the last count that he provided was 97,000 registered users, hosting 370,000 podcasts. So, it's pretty important. A lot of people are counting on it, and we need trustworthy and competent people. But I think it's really important altogether too that we have these open source alternatives to things like the iTunes or iTunes directory.
Absolutely. There is. Are you familiar with how the podcast gets added to GPodder?
Yeah, actually. So, if somebody comes and does a search and doesn't find it, the person can actually add the feed. So, if you can add the RSS or the Atom link, usually that is all it takes to get a podcast added to the directory.
And I see here under HPR. And actually under quite a lot of the older podcasts that over time their older RSS feeds are still in there, but the new ones don't seem to be updated. So how would I go about, if that's happening for HPR, I assume it's also happening for other podcasts. For example, on the HPR feed where the icon for the logo is from 14 years ago, and we've updated our logo since. Is not opening a bug report here. I'm actually requesting, where do I go to find the code that I can fix that for everybody?
Yeah, so that's actually the thing Stefan's mentioned, is that we could probably use some help figuring out how to get rid of those, because they're essentially duplicates, they're older versions of these things. So if somebody is familiar with how to do some stuff like that, if they wanted to come over to the code base and submit some simple requests for that, that'd be great.
Excellent. There's one thing I noticed as well when doing this, compiling that list, I gathered a lot of information from people's RSS feeds or Atom feeds, and the RSS feeds are so flexibly defined that people use them in different ways. And then you have the Atom feeds who are so strictly defined that people import their own namespaces. So essentially you have two feed types that try to do the same thing but end up being chaotic. So I have no idea how they've managed to be able to pull in all these feeds and still produce a working site. So my hat goes off to to him for that, I must say.
Yeah, it's definitely a very awesome piece of software engineering. He said that it hasn't been too big of a problem lately. Like a lot of people have been, you know, I guess a lot of the stuff gets cleaned up automatically. But originally there's also like a sub project, called the feeds.gpotter.net. And so it's essentially a parsing service and it will clean it all up and a clean JSON response. And also some like warnings and stuff if somebody wants to manually go on there and see what was going on. But, so there's that. And then he's also got, a Python library, that's called Podcast Parser that kind of does some similar stuff too. So so it's what's kind of neat about gpotter.net is that it's more than just, you know, the website and the services behind it. It's like he's got some other things to really make podcasts, more friendly for open source community.
Wow, that is cool. I'm just on this website and I'm now drooling. Oh, very nice. Very, very nice. So this is actually something that we have been struggling with RSS feeds, particularly trying to promote other... The background to HPR is we're a community podcast network where our goal is we're trying to share knowledge as much as possible and we're as encouraging as possible of new podcasts that come along. And when they do, we try and submit them to the linuxlink.net, which is a feed of podcasts, and we try and work with the hosts to see if there's anything they can do to improve their website or feed or website or whatever. So this will be an excellent resource that we can also get them to add themselves to the gpotter.net directory as we go. Fantastic.
Yeah, it is. That's awesome.
Any other hidden gems that I would like to know about?
That's kind of the limit to what I've done. One of the other things that's actually really neat is that you could, in theory, you can clone the whole repo and in theory run your own gpotter.net at home if you really wanted to, which is, you know, kind of how we, you know, it's all fully functional. Like most of us that are working on the project, you know, clone the code and have a local instance set up with our own data just for testing purposes. And so that's kind of neat too. If you wanted to make up your own server, you theoretically could and play with it.
But how do you distribute the database, which is very pertinent to a HPR question?
So yeah, obviously that's the hard part. So I think as developers, what we'll do is we'll take a subset of the production database to basically test against live data, and obviously it's, instead of using the live database to test against, but in theory that's what you would do is you would kind of like build your own database if you wanted to, you know, play with it at home.
What is interesting to me especially would be to get a copy of the database. Is that possible?
I'll have to see how to do that. I'm not really sure how we could, but I mean, it's just a Postgres database, so I imagine, you know, dumping it and providing it within the to the license and everything would be possible.
Yeah, because we've already taken the decision to publish our database as well, but we're trying to see what the best way of doing that. It will also be a Postgres database. The idea being for longevity of the project, that if anything happens, any of us, that somebody else can take it and go with it, that people can use the data in any way that they see fit themselves, but also from a redundancy point of view, that if we are DDoSed and somebody takes out the website, we can just bring it up somewhere else as something else. So, if you are solving that problem, or if we're solving that problem, it would be an interesting one, because the gpotter.net without the database is, you know, pretty much useless, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like, because I don't know about the intricacies of the database, and you know, I know GDPR and privacy is a big topic and issue nowadays.
Truth be told, you know, if you're publishing a podcast and you're putting it free on the internet, then you're licensed in it, so there's an explicit license, so GDPR would not apply. particularly if you have a Creative Commons license and you've released it, you're releasing everything in that under GDPR, including your email, and you can't take that back because you've licensed it. Job done, GDPR won't apply. In my humble opinion, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah. yeah, same here, not a lawyer. I think the thing is like, I just don't know if they're separate. I'm not sure how it's constructed, if the user data is kept.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what it would look like, you know, obviously we don't want everybody's podcast information, what they've subscribed to and what they've listened to.
Oh, no, not that. Oh, that. Yes, possibly. Yes. Oh, crikey. Absolutely. GDPR absolutely would apply to that. Yes. No.
Yeah.
I'm talking. Oh, God. Had a nutty. Yes. You're completely correct, sir. Obviously, my podcast, that would be very sensitive information. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the directory of the podcast only, not people's personal information. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No.
Don't anyone go away with the idea that that sort of thing, my podcast directory listening would be, is definitely covered by the GDPR. Yes. Okay. Phew.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody with their tin hat just deleted their account. Like, nope, give up. Can't have that. Can't have that.
No. And this gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling that you are thinking along that line, because my history with gpodder.net is more from the searching the podcast point of view and not the logging in and managing all my podcasts. And even then, everybody on HPR already knows what I listen to, because I think I've published my OPML file several times. So that's the thing.
Nice.
Okay. No, but good. But that's interesting that you do need to take that sort of stuff into account. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just the hallmark of any...
Sorry, go on.
Oh, and I was going to say, I think that's just important in any kind of software project nowadays, is just to make sure that you're taking being and choice into consideration.
Absolutely. It's actually not something that I've particularly used on the website. As I said, I've used the website mostly as a, you know, bare bones directory service, and I don't use the option to sync. So if you have a gpodder.net client on your phone, a gpodder client that uses the API, can you sync what you've watched and stuff with your desktop using the website?
As long as you've got a gpodder compliant desktop client, I do believe that's the whole idea, is that gpodder.net is the back end that allows you to sync between the two.
And then obviously what you're saying is that you could download, if you didn't like this being hosted in the cloud, you could download a copy of gpodder.net, build your own database, run it on your own Raspberry Pi in your front garden, and
absolutely.
Then you can sync your own devices. Okay, very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously, you know, the caveat is that it really depends on how the client has implemented the API and which version and all that good stuff. So, obviously. Nothing within, if it's without the scope of the project, like we wouldn't say like, oh yeah, it all worked. Yeah, definitely, you know, your mileage may vary, but and let us know. And, you know, part of the ecosystem is just, you know, doing pull requests and feature requests to other projects too, to be like, hey, implement this feature, you know, how come this one lets me sync and yours doesn't, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. But you could also, you know, pool the API yourself to have a, to keep your own stats and stuff on what you're listening to and what you're what's where and how far you are on various different things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and actually, the API version 3 development is in full swing. So if somebody is wants to try to implement some of that, please come by and work on the API a little bit.
So you just go over to GPodder My GPO.
Yep, that's correct. And that's why it's called MyGPO. Is originally it was under the URL of my.gpodder.net or .org, excuse me. So that was where the MyGPO came from. But then, yeah, of course, you can download it and run your own GPO if you want to.
Okay. Just browsing the GitHub site now at the minute.
Yeah. And also, you know, we're trying to get all this stuff off of Stefan's we've requested that he kind of stay on as like the benevolent dictator until things are running smoothly. But the idea is that we would have all of the pieces in place to him by the end of January, I think.
Okay, that's awesome. Fantastic stuff. I'm actually running out of questions now because I'm I'm more thinking about how where the code is, and I'm more excited to get into the project. So let's have a look at this, some questions that I sent to you. So we've covered the features, we've talked about the tech, we talked about the ABI and the libraries, we've talked about the license. Adding a show, we've also covered. And then the update. Cool.
Yeah. I'm also noticing here, kind of along the lines that you're talking about, like of sharing the database and, you know, DDoSing and, you know, how to resiliency and stuff like that. I think we are looking for more help with like hosting too. So if there's people who want to donate resources, that'd be really helpful. So if that's, you know, just, you know, their servers in the cloud, or if they want to use something like Heroku to host an instance, and then we'd have to figure out how to replicate the data. But those are definitely some things that we're looking at to kind of increase the robustness and availability of the program.
That will be interesting for us as well, from a HPR point of view, because we're planning on switching to a Postgres backend, albeit with a pushed static frontend. Because of our use case, but making that distributed would be a nice nut to crack, to be honest.
Yeah, you know what actually might be kind of neat is if you guys, I don't know if you wanted to, fork gbotter.net and just use all the same stuff on the back end, but maybe, you know, tailor the website so it looks all pretty, like with a Hacker Public Radio flare. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, but the I'm not sure that that'll work because we have very weird and specific requirements for our site. But that said, we are looking at pushing database schemas out. In our case, we don't have to worry about GDPR because people have already released everything to us in the public license, so we're good to go.
Yeah.
So there are currently there are 52 issues open. I presumably somebody can help. Go along, have a look at some of the issues that are open there and do some triage work on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's one of the things that we kind of picked up early, actually, was trying to get our hands wrapped around that and get, because, yeah, Stefan was, you know, doing this all by himself for a while. And so there's a fella, I don't know if he's in India. I haven't got to talk to him too much. His name's Swadin. And he's been pretty active with, you know, receiving the requests and triaging them and pinging people for help. That's one of the things we're still trying to get smoothed out, so where everybody else is doing the code changes and stuff. And Stefan's been really helpful about pointing people in the right direction, helping us get our local test instances set up so that we can do proper testing.
How are you organized as a team now?
So that's actually one of the internal issues that we're still that we're doing right now. We're trying to figure out how we want to do the governance within. And some of that is just, you know, sure, we got a whole bunch of volunteers, but who's going to stick around? Who's not going to stick around? So I think you know, early ideas were just to kind of be along the lines of have somebody be the external facing communications type person, have somebody kind of head up the development efforts, and have somebody head up the operations efforts. And under those three, having backups. And from there, I think we're going to roll with that and see how it goes. But I think Stefan's still soliciting ideas about how we want to manage this.
Do you have like a basic, do you have a mail list where you're doing these discussions, or is it just internal?
So we have a private GitHub repo that are tracking all these things, and also we have, so if anybody wants to volunteer, and they can get a hold of us, and we'll provide them with the Slack link, and they can start collaborating there.
How did they get a hold of you?
Let's see. I think we just changed it, so I think it's support@gpotter.net. I think previously Stefan was just handing out his email address, which was Stefan@gpotter.net. Nobody else has gpotter.net, so if you poke around on GitHub, you can just ping us on there too, and we'll send you a link to the Slack.
Okay, cool. But probably step one would be to to go to the GitHub page, and most people have a GitHub account, log some issues there, and then I imagine you'll spot people who are being supportive of the project and pull them in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, this seems to be... I would also put in another one there, which would be the health and health of the database itself, looking for duplicate key, duplicate shows, looking for issues with feeds, improving the search and that sort of stuff. There's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's something where you might not necessarily be technically too great, but you could very well help out by, you know, just so I don't know, somebody contacting HBR and saying, hey, you've got 15 different feeds on GPod, or which one do you actually want to use?
That's a good thing. I think when somebody can like come up with a way to, you know, identify the possible duplicates and then maybe do a report and then be like, all right, how are we gonna which one of these is actually the new one, which one is, you know, which ones need to be removed, so actually when somebody signs on as a publisher, that they also their contact information is in there, so that we can reach out to them and be like, hey, which one of these are correct.
The issue, well, now that I'm thinking about that, and this is why this interview is like falling apart, because I'm now thinking about problems of the inside the database, so it's moved from an interview into a debugging session. The issue that I have with the HPR feed is that there are six valid feeds, because we've got a AUG MP3 and Speaks feed for the 10-day, and then we've got the full feed, which is, so we've got six different feeds that people could subscribe to, and they're all legitimate. How would one then consolidate those down into one publisher feed? I imagine also somebody like Juniper Broadcasting, they have a podcast network, and then underneath that they've got the different shows, and underneath that they got the different formats.
I know when you search for Jupiter Broadcasting, it pops up as the show, they come up by show, and I think the way that it pings on Jupiter Broadcasting is that it's like in the metadata or the descriptions and stuff. But actually that's actually a good thing. I'm not sure if we're actually already doing it that way or not, but being able to have a publisher or a network be like a single point of entry to their various feeds, and being able to select which one you want to subscribe to under that, would be, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and then the thing about validating the feed as well, a verified feed, and would be useful from the point of view of updating. And also iTunes has a way of automatically switching. If somebody changes their feed location, that it will automatically switch. So that would be something that I'm volunteering myself for here. I actually noticed. And I think the best way to do that would be Ken said, yes. Ken owes me a show. Yes, Ken opens his big mouth again. But to be honest with you, if this is something that causes me pain, because we do a lot of the hallway tracks, and I want to automate this where I'll be able to go in and produce a, you know, a two-sided little leaflet that you can hand out to people and go, you know, you've turned up at this open source event because you listened to one show on Juniper Broadcasting. Did you know that these other shows are available? And it's a, you know, you can see people's eyes really lighten up going, oh my God, look at all this podcast listening I have. But that is super pain in the arse to put together because of all these issues with the feeds and stuff. So cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the backend automation, the limitation we're having right now is again, you know, we're working with free donated resources on the server side, and I think that's what limits the update frequency and the cron jobs and all the automated stuff in the background. You know, the more you run, the more computing time you need, and I think that's where we're in need of more of computing power on the back end.
We as a project have been very lucky to have support from anonymoushost.com, where we do, they host the BinRev project and they also host HPR, so we're very happy for them. But over the course of my time, we have been approached by people who walked up to us at booths and offered hosting because we're a project. So I'll have a route out and see if some of those contacts would be willing to donate some servers to you guys.
Perfect. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm not promising anything. It's just like somebody after a few beers.
Event, all right. Let me scratch that one out.
Yeah, do that. Thanks. But I'll keep my ears open that if we get that type of offers in again, because this is very compatible with our sort of ethos here, particularly the ability to search by the Creative Commons license.
Yeah, absolutely.
Says he clicking away.
What's that?
Says he clicking away in the background.
Oh.
So This American Life is the most popular podcast at the moment. Friday Night Comedy from the BBC has got, all right, actually, This American Life's got 3,212 entries. So where's HPR on this list? How come? So we've got podcasts, the most popular podcasts, and then we've got the most popular episodes, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, 1,500 subscribers.
HPR has 1,500 subscribers. So you would imagine we will be at the top then, but we're not being listed. Why are we not being listed? Not to worry. This would be issues that we can open in GitHub, I imagine. Pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing is, you know, we definitely want to keep growing this and adding more features and making it more robust. And I think, you know, adding more people, like the way Stefan's doing it, you know, releasing it in the wild and is how it's going to happen.
Yeah. Very, 16 people. That's quite a lot actually to come out of the woodwork for a project, I must say. Hopefully it bodes well. And no reason why, other people can't start logging issues and requests as well. Because actually gpodder.net, given its license, is something that I wouldn't mind supporting because, you know, it's a free open source project, whereas I don't particularly want to, you know, if you do a lot of refining and improving the recommendations on a proprietary platform, it just goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Did I miss anything in this interview?
No, I think we did good. We went a whole 40 minutes already.
That's nothing. 2-3 hours would be fine. No, I'm definitely going to have you guys back because now I lost the plot halfway through this thing. It's turned more into a chat. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's all good. It's good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Maybe next time we'll do it later in the evening so I can have a beer while we're doing this.
Yeah, good call. By the way, we do a New Year show every year. So feel free to join in that. The whole idea behind that one is to it's put on by not actually by me, by Honky Magoo and Kevin, and it's where we do a 26-hour show, so from when the first time zone comes in to the last time zone goes out, and we you could just come on to Mumble here and, you know, say hello, and then later on June, July your New Year's greeting will be released to the world.
Very cool.
But it's a way for podcasters and their listeners to have a chat together. So sometimes you know, it's one day we set aside to try and come on and say hello and have a chat.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think that'd be a great way for us to connect with the buffoon and let them, you know, tell us what they want and what they're thinking.
Cool. Excellent. I'll post the show and then hopefully people will have feedback. People can log issues in GitHub. Couldn't be simpler. And if anyone wants to supply more hosting, get in touch with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the one other way to get a hold of us too is I monitor the Twitter account. So if you want to hit gpodder.net on Twitter, I'll see that within, you know, a few hours or so.
Just made a note of that for the show notes. Cool. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. And
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
No worries. And let's do a follow-up in a few months.
Yeah, sounds great, sir.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Have a good one. Take care.
Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.